Chapter 63. Purpose of being knocked down. The popular Mr. Hilton was the next arrival, and he having, at the request of the Miss Crumptons, undertaken the office of Master of the Ceremonies, the quadrilles commenced with considerable spirit. The young men by the door gradually advanced into the middle of the room, and in time became sufficiently at ease to consent to be introduced to partners. The riding master danced every set, springing about with the most fearful agility, and his wife played a rubber in the back parlor, a little room with five bookshelves, dignified by the name of the study. Setting her down to whist was a half-yearly piece of generalship on the part of the Miss Crumptons. It was necessary to hide her somewhere, on account of her being a fright. The interesting Lavinia Brooke Dingwall was the only girl present, who appeared to take no interest in the proceedings of the evening. In vain was she solicited to dance, in vain was the universal homage paid to her as the daughter of a member of Parliament. She was equally unmoved by the splendid tenor of the inimitable Lipscini, and the brilliant execution of Miss Letitia Parsons, whose performance of the Recollections of Ireland was universally declared to be almost equal to that of Moscheles himself. Not even the announcement of the arrival of Mr. Theodosius Butler could induce her to leave the corner of the back drawing room in which she was seated. "Now, Theodosius," apostrophe said Miss Maria Crumpton, after that enlightened pamphleteer had nearly run the gauntlet of the whole company, "I must introduce you to our new pupil." Apostrophe, Theodosius looked as if he cared for nothing earthly. "She's the daughter of a member of Parliament," apostrophe said Maria. Theodosius started. "And her name is?" Apostrophe, he inquired. "Miss Brooke Dingwall." Apostrophe, great heaven. Apostrophe, poetically exclaimed Theodosius, in a low tone. Miss Crumpton commenced the introduction in due form. Miss Brooke Dingwall languidly raised her head. "Edward." Apostrophe, she exclaimed, with a half-shriek, on seeing the well-known nankeen legs. Fortunately, as Miss Maria Crumpton possessed no remarkable share of penetration, and as it was one of the diplomatic arrangements that no attention was to be paid to Miss Lavinia's incoherent exclamations, she was perfectly unconscious of the mutual agitation of the parties. And therefore, seeing that the offer of his hand for the next quadrille was accepted, she left him by the side of Miss Brooke Dingwall. "Oh, Edward!" Apostrophe exclaimed that most romantic of all romantic young ladies, as the light of science seated himself beside her. "Oh, Edward, is it you?" Apostrophe, Mr. Theodosius assured the dear creature, in the most impassioned manner, that he was not conscious of being anybody but himself. "Then why this disguise?" "Oh, Edward Neville Walter, what have I not suffered on your account?" Apostrophe, Lavinia, hear me, apostrophe replied the hero, in his most poetic strain. "Do not condemn me unheard. If anything that emanates from the soul of such a wretch as I can occupy a place in your recollection, if any being so vile deserve your notice, you may remember that I once published a pamphlet and paid for its publication, entitled Considerations on the Policy of Removing the Duty on Beeswax." Apostrophe, I do. Apostrophe, sobbed Lavinia. "That," apostrophe continued the lover, "was a subject to which your father was devoted heart and soul." Apostrophe, he was. Apostrophe, reiterated the sentimentalist. "I knew it," apostrophe continued Theodosius, tragically. "I knew it, I forwarded him a copy. He wished to know me. Could I disclose my real name? Never. No, I assumed that name which you have, so often pronounced in tones of endearment. As Neville Walter, I devoted myself to the stirring cause. As Neville Walter, I gained your heart. In the same character, I was ejected from your house by your father's domestics. And in no character at all, have I since been enabled to see you. We now meet again, and I proudly own that I am Theodosius Butler." " The young lady appeared perfectly satisfied with this argumentative address, and bestowed a look of the most ardent affection on the immortal advocate of beeswax. "May I hope," said he, "that the promise your father's violent behavior interrupted may be renewed?" "Let us join this set," replied Lavinia, coquettishly, "for girls of 19 can coquette." "No," ejaculated he of the Nankeens. "I stir not from this spot, writhing under this torture of suspense. May I hope? "You may." "The promise is renewed?" "It is." "I have your permission?"
"You have."
"To the fullest extent?"
"You know it."
Returned the blushing Lavinia. The contortions of the interesting butler's visage expressed his raptures. We could dilate upon the occurrences that ensued. How Mr. Theodosius and Miss Lavinia danced, and talked, and sighed for the remainder of the evening, how the Miss Crumptons were delighted thereat. How the riding master continued to frisk about with 1 horsepower, and how his wife, from some unaccountable freak, left the whist table in the little back parlor, and persisted in displaying her green headdress in the most conspicuous part of the drawing room. How the supper consisted of small triangular sandwiches in trays, and a tart here and there by way of variety. And how the visitors consumed warm water disguised with lemon, and dotted with nutmeg, under the denomination of negus. These, and other matters of as much interest, however, we pass over, for the purpose of describing a scene of even more importance. A fortnight after the date of the ball, Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire, M.P. was seated at the same library table, and in the same room, as we have before described. He was alone, and his face bore an expression of deep thought, and solemn gravity. He was drawing up a bill for the better observance of Easter Monday. The footman tapped at the door. The legislator started from his reverie, and Miss Crumpton was announced. Permission was given for Miss Crumpton to enter the sanctum. Maria came sliding in, and having taken her seat with a due portion of affectation, the footman retired, and the governess was left alone with the MPO. How she longed for the presence of a third party. Even the facetious young gentleman would have been a relief. Miss Crumpton began the duet. She hoped Mrs. Brooke Dingwall and the handsome little boy were in good health. They were. Mrs. Brooke Dingwall and little Frederick were at Brighton. "Much obliged to you, Miss Crumpton," said Cornelius, in his most dignified manner, "for your attention in calling this morning. I should have driven down to Hammersmith to see Lavinia, but your account was so very satisfactory, and my duties in the house occupy me so much, that I determined to postpone it for a week. How has she gone on?"
"Very well indeed, sir," returned Maria, dreading to inform the father that she had gone off.
"Ah, I thought the plan on which I proceeded would be a match for her." Here was a favorable opportunity to say that somebody else had been a match for her. But the unfortunate governess was unequal to the task. "You have persevered strictly in the line of conduct I prescribed, Miss Crumpton?"
"Strictly, sir."
"You tell me in your note that her spirits gradually improved."
"Very much indeed, sir."
"To be sure. I was convinced they would."
"But I fear, sir," said Miss Crumpton, with visible emotion, "I fear the plan has not succeeded quite so well as we could have wished."
"No." exclaimed the prophet. "Bless me. Miss Crumpton, you look alarmed. What has happened?"
"Miss Brooke Dingwall, sir."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Has gone, sir," said Maria, exhibiting a strong inclination to faint.
"Gone."
"Eloped, sir."
"Eloped. Who, with, when, where, how?"
apostrophe almost shrieked the agitated diplomatist. The natural yellow of the unfortunate Maria's face changed to all the hues of the rainbow, as she laid a small packet on the member's table. He hurriedly opened it. A letter from his daughter, and another from Theodosius. He glanced over their contents. Ere this reaches you, far distant appeal to feelings, love to distraction, beeswax slavery, apostrophe and C and C. He dashed his hand to his forehead, and paced the room with fearfully long strides, to the great alarm of the precise Maria. Now mind, from this time forward, apostrophe said Mr. Brooke Dingwall, suddenly stopping at the table, and beating time upon it with his hand. From this time forward, I never will, under any circumstances whatever, permit a man who writes pamphlets to enter any other room of this house but the kitchen. I'll allow my daughter and her husband £150 a year, and never see their faces again. And, damn, ma'am, I'll bring in a bill for the abolition of finishing schools. Apostrophe, some time has elapsed since this passionate declaration. Mr. and Mrs. Butler are at present rusticating in a small cottage at Ball's Pond, pleasantly situated in the immediate vicinity of a brick field. They have no family. Mr. Theodosius looks very important, and writes incessantly. But, in consequence of a gross combination on the part of publishers, none of his productions appear in print. His young wife begins to think that ideal misery is preferable to real unhappiness, and that a marriage, contracted in haste, and repented at leisure, is the cause of more substantial wretchedness than she ever anticipated. On cool reflection, Cornelius Brooke Dingwall Esquire, M.P. was reluctantly compelled to admit that the untoward result of his admirable arrangements was attributable, not to the Miss Crumptons, but his own diplomacy. He, however, consoles himself, like some other small diplomatists, by satisfactorily proving that if his plans did not succeed, they ought to have done so. Minerva House is in status quo, and the Mrs. Crumpton remain in the peaceable and undisturbed enjoyment of all the advantages resulting from their finishing school. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.